All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. While this frequently quoted line from Shakespeare's play, As You Like It, is a bit overused, it's applicable to teaching the social studies in general and the teaching of history in specific. After all, what is history if not the dramatic story about the rise and fall of empires and nations, the successes and failures of kings and queens and emperors? But is history just the rising and falling of empires? The successes and failures of royal figures? Of course not. Why then do we limit our teaching of history to past politics and political figures? Taking a wider view of history would allow students to fully explore the historical drama of society. Also, taking a wider view of history encourages teaching according to students' interests. And we all know that capturing and cultivating student interest is the key to learning. Well, how then are we to capture and accommodate student interest as diverse as visual art, music, poetry, sports, science, math, and of course social studies? The cultural approach to history does just that. As we'll see in just a moment, the cultural approach allows students to explore history with an eye towards their interests. In short, we look at history through the various parts or institutions of society. How does this translate to capturing students' interests? Well, are your students primarily interested in art? Let's explore the function of visual art in the American Revolution. Are your students interested in science? Then we can explore the ways that doctors and nurses spread infection and raise the death toll throughout the Civil War. Are your students interested in math? This provides a great inroad to discussing ancient Greece. The possibilities of the cultural approach to history are nearly endless. This, though, leads us to the question about what the cultural approach actually is. The cultural approach to history, as I mentioned earlier, it looks beyond the big names and big wars of history. It treats history like cultural anthropology. It looks at historical places and times as though they were present ones and investigates the whole society. However, before we can look at a whole society, we must identify the time and place in which that society is located. And that's the first step of the cultural approach. Step 1. Identify a geographical place and chronological time period. It's best to think of this as choosing a coordinate on a graph. And once a coordinate is chosen, one can evaluate the geography of a location and how that affects the other 6 clusters of activity within a society. What are the other 6 clusters? I'm glad you asked. The 6 clusters within a society are 1. Politics. What was the political organization of the time? How did the politics function during this time? How important were politics for this period of history we're studying? 2. Religion. How did religion, or a lack of religion, inform the society being studied? 3. Aesthetics. What did the artwork of the society look like? How did they define beauty? And how did the two interrelate to affect economics and politics? Which leads to 4, the intellectual developments of a society. Perhaps the broadest category, the intellectual sphere encompasses the components of a society associated with learning, such as philosophy, education, and technology. 5, the social culture. For example, what did the family structure look like in this society? What were the primary recreational activities? 6, economics. How did the society address the need for food and clothing? This category may extend from bartering to feudalism to pure capitalism versus socialism or communism. Each of these clusters of activity come together in a place and time to form a society. And because they function in unison to form a society, each must be attended to. The cultural approach proposes that this is the best and most thorough way for historians and students of history to unearth the past. This approach to history turns students into archaeologists. The classroom becomes a site where an ancient society becomes exhumed and explored, and this also provides multiple hooks for students. For your artistically oriented students, you can use the exploration of art, music, clothing, etc., into a way of talking about the economics and politics of a society. The cultural approach allows multiple inlets for students to get interested in history. If you're a public school teacher, I can almost assure that by this point you're saying to yourself, that's fine and dandy, but but I have to teach state standards. I don't have time for all this. And I understand that argument, and it's a legitimate concern for teachers. However, I propose that you can meet state standards using the cultural approach, and students will retain the information as well or better than they are now. You're probably even using much of the cultural approach and don't even realize it. The cultural approach isn't necessarily revolutionary in itself. Historians have been doing this type of investigation for close to a century. However, that type of investigation has not made its way into our public schools. Instead of active investigation and excited exploration, high-stakes testing have forced many educators into a drill-and-kill mentality, where history consists of merely rote memorization of big names and big events. The cultural approach includes those important aspects of history, but it also places those names and events in a network of connections that help reinforce learning. With a basic understanding of the cultural approach established, in our next podcast, we will discuss the ways that this approach may be used in the classroom. Until then, I thank you for your time, I thank you for your interest in the cultural approach, and look forward to speaking with you again on the next Cultural Approach podcast.